Let's talk about dance. Tanztheater calling.
After a very warm Christmas by the fire.
We decided.
I think that was my cue.
Yeah, that was your cue. You were a bit late, but that's all right.
Because I have to warm up.
Okay, Julie, good to have you here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank
good morning.
You.
I looked at your bio again, like at the Tanztheater website. When you came to the Tanztheater, that was in the mid-80s. You were born in Adelaide, worked and lived in Australia, and then you got with a friend on a trip to Europe.
Yes. We went to Bremen, and he knew a dancer in the company mm-hmm. who was actually in our company before. So mm-hmm. we went to stay at their house. They were friends, and yeah, then I decided to also to do class with the company. And being an incredibly naive Australian, I thought Reinhold Hoffman, it sounded so much like a man's voice. I didn't realize that the lady who was watching was the actual choreographer. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty crazy back then, so I was just myself. And she thought that that was quite interesting. So she said to me, would you like to do the audition? It's happening next week, which made me sort of like my jaw drop because I hadn't actually thought of that. I was just coming for a holiday for the first time to see outside of Australia, my mm-hmm. first trip overseas, we call it, for coming from Australia. And so she said, next week is the audition. And then I said, okay, I'll do it. And so we went to East Germany in between.
Gosh.
Which was such an amazing experience for me because I see it in black and white. Mm-hmm. I see it in grey and white and black. Because I came from Australia, which was for me so many different colours. And I can't explain it because maybe I wasn't emotionally grown up enough to explain with words. I have just in an image, I saw no colour. But the people I found to be also very nice. Once you got closer to them, which sounds funny in this time of corona, but back then you could actually go into a place and I remember the kind of, you know, the big jackets that made you have a headache because back then everyone had pure wool jackets, not like the light ones now. I used to get a headache walking around all day in Europe because I had a huge jacket on, which I never had to wear in Australia. So somehow there was this kind of weight, carrying this weight and coming to a place there was such a thing as weight. In their history, in their everyday life, in their gemüt, mm-hmm. in their hearts, was something incredibly new to me because I was just a young Australian girl that had a young Australian girl's life where we had a lot of energy and it seemed very off the cuff kind of living. Mm-hmm. And then I came to a place where the people seemed to be carrying a weight with them and I just remembered the feeling I had. And so then I went back to the audition and she asked me if I wanted to join the company. Then I had to make a second decision whether I was going to leave my country. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So I thought, okay, I'll try for a year, but I had to go back to Australia for 8 months.
When did you join the company? Was it then directly after? So you then did also an audition for Pina?
No, I was 2 years mm-hmm. in Bremen. Mm-hmm. And then the company of Reinhold's company, we went to Bochum, Schauspielhaus.
Okay.
With the idea that we would incorporate also the actors within our work, which never really happened. It happened more on our choreographic, when the dancers had a chance to choreograph, we worked with the actors too. But it was a very, very lively house. So we got to meet all of the actors and we had a lot to do with each other. It was very interactive, especially in the canteen. The canteens in the old days were incredible places. You know, you can like it or you can hate it. The cigarette smoke has something to do with the atmosphere. The drinking, the serious talks, the cigarettes, everything was very serious back then. People took their life very seriously and their theatre very seriously. Then from Bochum, it was just a half an hour drive or a 20-minute drive. So then I started to come and see much more performances here mm-hmm. and meet the dancers. And the dancers would come and see our performances. And then many dancers said to me, you have to audition, you have to audition. So I got the courage and came and auditioned.
Your first piece was Palermo, is that right?
Yes, but it happened in 89. I can't remember when, maybe December or something. I'm not quite sure, but it happened after the summer holiday. So I was a whole season without making a new piece.
Okay.
It was a very different kind of setup back then because we started before the summer holidays
mm-hmm. rehearsing
to rehearse for Palermo.
Oh.
And then there was a summer holidays. Then afterwards, we finished it. I'm so sorry that I don't have the right date, but it was after the Mauerfall
yeah.
in 89. So before, I did a lot of repertoire before I started making a new piece with Pina.
And how was it in the beginning to join the company? Because you said that also Tanztheater Wuppertal is like a family for you. So how was it to enter the family in the beginning?
Well, like everywhere, you have to be accepted. Yeah. A bit like everyone's a mother-in-law.
So you had a few.
No, but yeah, you had to be accepted. You had to be good enough for the family in a certain way, in a very kind of empathetic way at the same time, because the beauty is, of course, that in Pina's work is that everyone starts from zero in her eyes. Maybe there was a status within the offstage kind of heads, but the onstage heads, the status isn't there. We're together as a group of people on stage. Can I make a little example of how Pina saw things, how we didn't see it? For example, in 1980, when I had to take over Meryl Tankard's place, Meryl in the piece, she speaks a lot. She's very funny, and she's always pushing herself to the front. So when I had to learn her place, Pina didn't do a rehearsal with me. She said, here's the video. This is the video that I want you to look and come back and show me. Mm-hmm. So I came into Lichtburg alone with her. So then I start doing the scene and then she doesn't really say much. She just like nods her head. And I think, okay, I must be going in the right direction. And then she said, you know, she's not funny. Mm-hmm. Actually, imagine how sad it is to be a person that always has to push themselves to the front to be noticed. And someone that has to say so much that people notice them and that they feel their value with how much they're noticed. And I thought, that's the Pina that I know. She always has something on the side that you never thought of. You know, it's not face value with her. There is always more layers to the character on stage or what you're portraying. That touched me, actually. It made me feel better because it's very hard just to be a funny person. And if you think about many people who are funny or comedians, they often...
Very tragic.
They suffer from depression because it's very hard to be high and to always somehow hold people's well-being in your hands.
Yeah, or to be an image which you actually can't fulfill or don't want to fulfill.
And can't fulfill constantly.
Yeah. Was it something which you find inspiring to be part of this process or that you found enriched by it, that somebody gave you a different point of view or a different understanding of things?
Pina only would have said that because she probably saw that I thought I had to be funny. Mm-hmm. The everyday work it's only little steps. People now see the end product on stage and they also see Pina's oeuvre. So they see a whole body of works which seem to, on the international stage, have a high value,
in brackets,
but they also see the end product. They don't see the years of the little tripping up. So the thing is that every day we would go there and most of the stuff we would do was pretty bad, if you know what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. I think that was the beauty of the work, is that this trust was in the room, because until you find something really good, you do a lot of bad things. I mean, bad is wrong. You do a lot of things on your search. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of things that maybe are out of your comfort zone. And there is this slight balance that you have to have on stage, not to be in your comfort zone, to be a little bit uncomfortable at the same time. That's the vulnerability. That is the real human in you, because I don't think that we're so confident as human beings. I think we find our niche and then we try to excel in it. But really, I think that we are quite unsure human beings, because we're always having to try to understand how we fit in or who we are.
And I think it's very interesting that you say it, because sometimes when you as a spectator or audience see something, you think, oh, they're so strong, they're so, yeah, they do this and this and this. But actually to produce this or to get in a dialogue, it's the opposite almost. Huh?
Yeah, and for me, when I remember when I was 18 years old and I saw Pina for the first time, you see, that's what's so interesting for me. I didn't see this grandeur, what many of my colleagues saw. Mm-hmm. I saw very small details of these human beings. Because when you say they were strong, but Pina always, after having something strong, she always broke it apart, where you saw the people's shell crack. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is that, of course, somehow, even to get to work in the morning, you have to be strong. You have to get up and you have to do so many things on your preparation just to make that one step out of the house. And then you drive the car, and somehow you have to be strong driving a car. You have to see what's around you. So there are moments where you have to be strong, and there are moments where we are incredibly fragile. And so I think in Pina's pieces, I just said it like a daily life kind of example, but in Pina's pieces, she symbolically shows the strength that we have in us and the weakness that we have in us, and she puts it in those pieces. And of course, if you don't show the one, how can you show the other so strongly?
Mm. And it's so interesting because sometimes your strength can be your weakness.
Exactly, and that can be your beauty. Maybe that's what we were waiting for to see from you, that we can get in touch with you.
Yeah.
You know?
To connect.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this would be my next question, actually. What do you think is important to connect to people, especially when you're on stage? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to another kind of place now. I was working in a Hauptschule, mm-hmm. and it was all girls between 13 and 15. And when I arrived, I realized what I had in my mind to do with them and what they had in their mind, what I was going to do with them, were two worlds colliding. And I realized that they were coming from a world where they didn't feel that they were valuable. Mm-hmm. Also because they're in a Hauptschule. And amongst them, I think that there was also some kind of hierarchy about who's cool, who's not. There was a girl who was very bullied from them there. And suddenly they're all in one room and no one is testing them. How clever are you? What kind of clothes are you wearing? You know, all of those kind of questions. And then I realized over the weeks, very often we didn't dance, we used to just talk. And they opened up to me so much, like it was incredible, the things that they were telling me, which meant that they were telling each other, because the others were listening. And for me, this is something about Pina's work that touches me so much when you go out and you work with people who aren't dancers or who haven't learned the skill of... Because a skill is also kind of an armor, because you know what you're good at. So then you put that foot forward. And so these kids, and in the end, they were amazing. They went on stage, they put themselves in a place where they were in control. But I believe that this process of getting them there, we first of all had to break down all the barriers of you are valuable because of you, not because of what you can do, what you look like, how the others see you. It was amazing because they were actually listening to each other. And this was, for me, what Pina's work was. That through this kind of process that we used to do, we used to also listen to each other and see each other and get to know each other in an incredibly intimate way. So for me, a very important part of her work is this intimacy.
And do you think that through this, that you start to listen and try to listen and try also to understand the situation, that you gain trust?
By listening and watching and letting people don't feel judged.
Do you feel judged when you're on stage by the audiences?
When I'm immature, yes. For a while with Palermo, because I was young and it was very hard scene. And also Pina to get me there to where she wanted. It took a while. It wasn't like the first time I did it, it was how she wanted it. So she was sort of... Cruel is maybe too much of a hard word, but I felt that she was being cruel to me because she wanted me to be so strong. And I wanted her to say, yes, but it's very hard. I wanted her to see how hard it was for me, actually how it hurt me and how it hurt that every night I was expected to go there and be hurt. So in that period, I thought that the audience doesn't like me because I seem to be so emotionally highly strung and never get what I want. So I thought they don't like me. But the thing is that she wanted me to be in this extreme emergency situation of not getting what I want, to be absolutely screaming for help and yet have no pity for myself, to be over the pain of what is physically happening to me, because this scream comes from a very deep place. And this deep place is where all of those silent screams come from. That this huge dissatisfaction that the human race seems to feel, otherwise they wouldn't make wars and be so cruel to each other so often. This enormous dissatisfaction and this pain we inflict upon ourselves because of it. And yet, not a one little hair of pity for myself in that moment. You understand? Mm-hmm. So it was a very hard thing to capture for me. And so for a long period, I thought that the audience must think I'm hideous. So then Paris, I was in the cafe and someone was staring at me and I'm like, I was saying to my colleagues, they're staring at me. They're staring at me and they say, leave them alone. They probably thought you were good in the performance. I'm saying, no, but they're staring at me. I was realizing, yeah, I'm getting a little bit paranoid. I think that they think that I'm that person. And so that's what I say. I was very immature. So the more mature I got, the more I could understand that it's actually serving a higher purpose. It's not actually me that I should be looking at, especially in such strong moments like that when you are having to carry something so important on the stage. You have to be above that. And then you get to the point where it's not about me.
And how does this feel then?
That you are more of a vessel for the voice that needs to be heard.
And I think that's so interesting coming back again, because some people, or also sometimes as an audience, you think, oh, they're so narcissistic. They go this and this and do that and that. But it's actually the opposite.
Yeah. Actually, you know, in life, of course, you go through different stages. And a young dancer who I was, of course, I wanted to look good on stage. That's totally normal. I wanted people to think I'm good and I wanted to show my strength and everything like that. And then, of course, this is the beauty of growing older as an artist, because, of course, like Pina's pieces change because she was growing older as a person, I change. Like everyone changes. We've been babies. We're here where we are now. It was constantly evolving how we saw things. I remember when my children were small, and they were tiny and they couldn't walk yet. You can't believe the universe they saw on the carpet. Or when they were outside, my daughter, she was in the grass and she would look at every blade of grass. And one day a bumblebee was there and I was watching her and the bumblebee looked quite gigantic. And she touched it and she got stung. And I had to look up in Google to see if bumblebees can sting, because people say, it couldn't have stung her. It's a bumblebee. They don't sting. When you think how many things we've actually seen with different perspectives in our own lives, and that makes us who we are. Yeah.
Maybe as a last question, what are the moments when you really feel connected to the audiences? Is it at the applause or is it in a moment?
No, from the moment that you appear. Already before.
Oh yeah?
Without being kitsch. Mm-hmm. Because it could sound kitsch. It's like there is something incredibly amazing about the gathering in a theatre, about the energy that happens before a performance. Expectation, I don't really want to say, because expecting something means that you can be disappointed because you have your idea about what's going to occur. But what I loved about Pina's work before the digital age was that I believe that people came in, they didn't really know anything what was going to happen. They had no idea what that meant. They came in usually to a set, and already that's a strange world because there's somehow a proscenium arch, and beyond that proscenium arch, Peter Pabst or Rolf Bortzik created worlds, and you never knew what was going to happen in that world. So this expectation, and somehow when you think people's hearts are beating, they've come to this theatre, they're sitting there, they're next to people they don't know, the stage is there, they don't know what's going to happen, and your side stage, you're doing your last toys to people, you're preparing yourself, and you know what you're going to do that night. You're going to fill it up with that moment. With you, your beating heart, your breathing body, your skin, everything about you, the music, everything. And so this is already a connection, even though they can't see us yet. And then the performance starts, and for me, it's like a world opens up, and you even physically feel that. Imagine that someone comes on stage, and you, all of you 1,000 people, are supposed to look at this one person. How amazing is that already? I don't take that for granted.
Julie, thank you very much for opening up and being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody.